Welcome to Sassy. I'm Annie Murlowski, and I'm your host. Each week, we share the inspiring stories of female leaders throughout the tech industry. Thanks for joining us as we dive into the inspiring stories of career growth and development from women who are leading technology as we know it. Thank you so much for tuning in to listen to Sassy today. I am so excited to have one of my all-time favorite women in B2B marketing on. She was my inspiration for why I wanted to start this podcast. And today we are talking with Jane Sarah.
Yay. Hi. Thank you for having me, Anne. Love this show.
Well, I am so excited. It's such an honor to have you here. Like I shared, you know, you are one of my inspirations for having this podcast. And I think it's so important for us to be having conversations about women in leadership and what does it mean to be a woman in leadership. And I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about what are some of the milestones in your career that have brought you to what you're doing now? And if you can touch a little bit on why did you choose to start your podcast, Women in B2B Marketing?
Yes, I can do it all. And I'm so glad you created. We need more women on mics and stages, everybody. So if you have an idea for a show, start it, iterate from there. It doesn't have to be perfect. Go for it. So I'm so glad you started one, and it's awesome. Let's see, my career. So I've been all over the place industry-wise, but I've always been B2B marketing and a generalist. So that's kind of a common thread through my career. I'm one of the few who did go to school for marketing. I knew I wanted to do marketing from in school. I was not into accounting and all the other business classes I took. Marketing was my love since then. I went to get my MBA in marketing and international business. So I just kind of stayed on this path. But the industries is where I've kind of mixed things up. So I started out in international outsourcing and manufacturing, totally different space. I went into ERP and CRM reselling. So that was my first kind of foray into SaaS. I've been on the agency side, but marketing the agency. And then I've come back to SaaS in recruitment tech and automation tech, conversion marketing tech. I love SaaS. SaaS is where I think I see myself staying. So interesting, pretty straightforward career, but at different industries, just it's been interesting for me to learn different spaces. The podcast I started because I am a huge podcast listener. I start every day listening to either a podcast or an audiobook. And one day I was looking at my feed and I was scrolling through all my marketing podcasts and I realized they were all hosted by men. And when I was thinking more about it, 90% of the guests were men too. These were great guys, amazing. I learned from these shows. I still listen to these shows, but it didn't reflect my everyday. Like in most of my career, very subjective, most of my career, I worked with other women. So it didn't make sense to me. So I did a little research. There's not a lot of stats still on podcasts and gender, but there is on the marketing industry and leadership. And I forget the exact stat, but it's around 60% skews female. Any marketers, and I don't think it's B2B specific, but the marketing team is skews 60% female. But my feed, very subjectively going through, was all men. So it didn't make sense that what I was experiencing didn't reflect what I was seeing there. So I just wanted to create, I was trying to think why this might be, why women weren't getting on podcasts. Do you know how people, I compare it back to when you apply to a job and there's that stat, like men will apply to a job when they fit like 50% of the responsibilities and the qualifications and women need like 99%. I'm making those numbers up, go double check those. It's definitely around that, but you get the idea. And I think it's very similar with podcasts. Like I think men will start a podcast and just jump into it and women want to perfect it and get it really like tied up before they put themselves out there. And being a guest on a show, I think men are more like, yeah, I'll talk about it. What are we talking about? And they're fine to jump into it. And women are like, oh, they want the questions. They want to prepare. This is very generalizing. Like not everybody is like this. I get that. But this was my hypothesis. So I started this show to get it, create a comfortable space, full edit rights. No one has taken me up on editing at all. But having that like comfort and welcoming, like I try to create a warm setting. So I don't put people on the spot and it's just a comfortable, real conversation. So I think I just want to get more women on mics and stages. It's as simple as that.
I love that. And it's interesting. There used to be a group called the 3%. And they said that only 3% of the roles that were senior marketers were women. So there is definitely a breakdown somewhere in between that the marketing industry is 60% women, but only 3% advanced to senior roles. And I think that that plays out sometimes too in, if you're listening to podcasts, is that it's usually more senior individuals who are starting podcasts and who even have the opportunity to go on podcasts that you're looking for your senior leadership. And so you start, you know, you start kind of limiting your pool of who you can invite. And so I agree, it is so important. And I'm honestly, it's been an inspiration to me in my career, what you've been doing. So I'm really glad we get to have this conversation now.
Thank you. And I'm going to look into that, what you just were talking about, those stats, because that boils my blood a little bit. 3%. That's crazy.
Okay. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that's changing. That stat is probably, there used to be a conference and I attended the conference. It was probably 9 years ago. So maybe we've changed. Maybe it's 6%. Like, fingers crossed that they solved some of that problem. And it's shifted.
I'm already learning from this podcast, so thank you for sharing. I'm going to go look this up afterwards. Hopefully the name of the conference has changed to, at least 10%.
Yeah, if I can find it, I'll put it in the show notes. I'll see if I can track it down and I'll put it in the show notes so you have it. Well, most roles, you know, obviously you always wanted to be in marketing, but, you know, SaaS marketing and podcasting and everything you're doing now, that didn't exist when we were children. Yes. So what was it that you did want to be? And do you think that those desires from then relate to what you do now?
So funny. So I was thinking about this a little bit. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I think I'm at that pivotal point in my career where, like, what's next becomes a question, right? But when I was younger, so as high school, I would say, and probably even before then, I really wanted to be a morning news broadcaster, like an anchor at like 5 a.m. on the news. I don't know how I would have survived waking up so early, but that was my dream until my teacher crushed my dreams and told us, she was the broadcast journalism teacher in high school, and she told us, don't go into broadcast journalism, only 2% make it through. And it was just really like depressing. So I did not follow that route. I listened to her, but that was my dream. And I watch the morning news. It's my favorite news. It's pretty happy stuff that they cover. It's light, and it's a great way to start the day along with podcasts. So it's interesting that you asked that, because now I see myself full circle, like with podcasting. I'm not a journalist. I am not an anchor by any means, but I kind of am getting a taste of that morning news feel and creating. I mean, I like to create inspirational but feel good content, right? Which kind of coincides with the morning news dream of my past.
I love that. And then you don't have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
There we go. Unless my son wakes me up. Yeah, I'm good. It's not an everyday thing.
So let's pivot a little bit to talk about, you know, challenges that you've experienced, and what's a challenge that you've had to overcome, and how have you done that?
So I have been thinking about this a lot. I have encountered little challenges. I think it's just how I'm made up, is I'm very forward looking. So if something happens, I kind of work through it and then I'm on to the next, and I always think positively and moving forward, right? But if I'm looking back at challenges, I think something that I've encountered several times is being the woman in marketing, even as a leader in marketing, you tend to get things put on your plate that are like, organize this lunch and you get the takeout order for this and like organize this happy hour, and like some HR stuff gets put on you and you kind of get the miscellaneous stuff. And I've always just taken it like, okay, this is like the miscellaneous part of the job. I'm not one to be like, oh, that's not in my job description. I think we're taught to say that, like to not be the person who's like, that's not in my job description. It's kind of ingrained in you through your career. So you're trying to be a team player. But yeah, I've always defaulted to being the person to organize the lunch and make sure everybody's happy and like doing this and getting the happy hour organized, even though that does not help market the company by any means. So working through that, I think the past few years, I mean, being remote, that changes a little bit, right? That ask even being on the table is kind of removed. But I've been much more aware of not volunteering for that first and not letting that be put on my plate, those kind of things, if it doesn't make sense. And somebody else will always take it over. But I've also made sure that people on my team aren't the default for that all the time as well. So I make them aware, as I was unaware when I was younger, that this just doesn't become a thing, that's their responsibility when it really shouldn't be.
I love that. And I think that that's something, it happens even without intention. Like you go into a meeting and they say, could somebody take notes?
Yes, and exactly.
Often the women will be the first ones to volunteer for that. But it's usually the person who is presenting a meeting and asks someone else to take notes. I find in my experience, very rarely is it a woman, because the woman will just take her own notes as she is leading the meeting.
This is true.
It's like, that's a weird, like, it's not intentional. It's not meant to be malicious. It's very unconscious, but it happens, and it still happens virtually.
Yes, exactly. You're right. That's another one. Virtually, something that's been really helpful to avoid being in that situation is transcripts, right? Like now Zoom calls, Google Meets, they can all get recorded and transcripts. So, and with AI, it can get the notes done for you. So if anyone volunteers for that, just have AI do it.
Well, I love that. A good AI note taker, it's the best.
Exactly.
Well, this is a challenge that's kind of just in the space. And we were talking about this before we hopped on the recording, and we wanted to pause that dialogue and come back and actually talk about it on the podcast. But there is this push, you know, particularly in the marketing space, but I think across the B2B industry and across SaaS, for more of this, the fractional roles. And what does that mean for the future of teams when perhaps leadership is in that fractional position? And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yes, I have so many. So I'm going to go from one extreme to the other. First, I see the value in fractional work. I do some fractional work. To me, it's a rebrand of consulting. Like, I've done consulting almost my whole career alongside whatever my full-time position is, because I like it. I think when you consult on the side, it gives you a lot of new ideas, just exposure to other teams and the way they're thinking and processes and what's working, what's not. Gives you a lot of ideas that you can then bring to your full-time position too, and vice versa. So it's a healthy way to keep your brain really active and growing. So I'm a big fan of doing consulting work, as long as it's not competitive, right? And everyone's aware of what you're doing. But to me, it's a rebrand, saying fractional. I told the main difference is that you're getting equity in addition to being paid. So that's the fractional work. You're getting equity in the startup company, which is interesting because you can finagle that as a consultant as well. But I do, we were talking about this, we're hearing that fractional work is kind of taking over, and it's kind of doom and gloom for the full-time marketer, right? That our like package and benefits and full-time work is the way of the past, and now the way of the future is fractional work. So my personal thoughts, I've seen so many people now starting their own agency or fractional practice, right? And going into just creating this own thing and taking on their own clients. It feels like everybody is doing that this year. My entire feed is full of people that used to be at full-time SaaS companies or other B2B companies, and now they own an agency, or they are a fractional and part of this hub of fractional workers, which great for them. If they love doing that, awesome. Kudos to you. And I see that like they're thriving, right? It's great success. But I can't imagine that being the way the world goes and only being fractional. Because when I'm consulting in a company, I can bring value on specific points. But if I'm not there full time, I'm not exposed to all of the happenings inside the company, right? I'm missing key pieces. I'm not in the big company all hands, and I'm not in all of these little intricate details that I'm just going to miss as a consultant. And that's okay, because you can ask these questions. It's kind of the nature of that business. You catch up, or you focus on one piece that they really need work on. If you're only hiring fractional, there's no more in-house full-time marketing person, everything is disjointed. And you're not going to, like, there's companies that I consult for that have a lot of different consultants. And without a full-time person to connect the dots of all of those consultants or fractional workers, so many balls are going to drop, and the efficiency is going to be just completely down the tubes. So I can't see this being the way of the future. Sure, a combination, a hybrid of full-time marketers or full-time employees and fractional, cool. yes, I see that happening. Just like bringing in experts where you need them, plug and play, and having, or like kind of a coach situation. There's so many different ways to play with fractional, but only having fractional seems like a really bad idea to me.
Yeah, that's my gut feeling as well, is that it is, I think it's a short-term solution to the economy we are in right now, where often you don't have the budget for whatever reason for that full burden of compensation for a full-time headcount, but you do need somebody who is strategic. Maybe you have your tactical workers who were, you know, they have a lower compensation point, and so you're able to keep those tactical workers, but now you've lost that strategic leader. And so I see it as being a temporary solution. And I'm hopeful that we'll see that pendulum kind of like swing back the other way to where we have more of these embedded leadership roles. So it's definitely interesting to watch this year, because I agree, it's very much like you look at LinkedIn and it's every other person has started something. And what I really love the idea of a fractional leader for, and I've seen it in a couple instances, is when a fractional leader is brought in to build the team and hire the right full-time people. And I think that is really, really smart. Is that like maybe they're coming in, they're setting some kind of foundational pieces, making sure you have the right tech stack or making sure you have messaging on your website. And then they are actually helping build that team. Because often in startups, founders, you know, or whoever may be the actual like CEO or C-suite, maybe they don't know anything about that function. And so for them to even start interviewing is kind of confusing. And so I think that there's power in that fractional leader being the person who comes in and says, okay, let me put all the right chess pieces on the board. We're good. You go play your chess and I am going to go and take on another board. And that I like.
Yeah. There's so many ways, right, that fractional could work in that way, where in as a hybrid. Right? Like coming in and hiring the team, love it. Yes, that's a really great use of fractional work, or a fractional CMO, for example. Then there's if you bring somebody in, like something's faltering, right? And you're like, we need somebody, an outside perspective. Everybody's been in it too long to be able to step away and see where we're broken. Bringing in a fractional CMO to help assess, right? And see where there's gaps or what can help there. That's another way. Then there's fractional that are like dedicated to different strengths. So if we don't have any partnerships on our marketing team. Okay, let's bring in a fractional VP partnerships who can help us get this program started. And there's so many different ways to bring it in. But I completely agree. At the end of the day, you need somebody, at least one person, depending on the size of the team and the size of the company, right, and how fast they're growing, who's in it all the time, knows everybody on the team. We can talk about this too, but relationships internally and externally are so key. Even on job descriptions you see right now, collaboration, cross-departmental collaboration and alignment is everywhere, because still silos are an issue. So if you have silos as an issue and you are bringing in fractional work, that's still going to be an issue, that you need somebody internally that can help smooth that out and just create those relationships over time internally, and then bring in help as needed externally.
Well, in that same sense, there's also that career pathing for those ICs, that if they don't have somebody who is truly invested in growing their career and understands how to mentor them, not that you can't have someone who is your boss, who has never done your job. Like, obviously, you can have a good mentor who has no concept of the day-to-day of your work. But I think that you lose some of that. And so it becomes this, well, how am I supposed to progress in my career if I have no senior leader? I can rely on these fractional leaders and lean on them. But at the end of the day, they're paid an hourly rate not to do that for me.
Yes, exactly. Like having that internal coach and advocate for the team, it's just, I mean, there are some kick-ass fractional CMOs out there that would probably be great at this, but it's going to be like finding a needle in a haystack, someone who can basically do the job of a full-time employee beyond the tasks that need to be checked off the list, right? Just there's so many other soft skills that are necessary beyond the job description or the to-do list that a fractional person typically wouldn't be able to accomplish.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Well, one of the reasons a lot of people choose to go fractional is for work-life balance. And that's why I feel like, particularly for women, you see a lot of women in fractional leadership roles when they have children.
Yeah.
And And, yes. you know, that's amazing. Like, it honestly, it does offer ability and flexibility to be there for your kids and not have to be in set meetings or whatever that might be. So yeah. how do you feel you handle work-life balance as a woman in tech? And do you feel that it's different from your male counterparts?
Haha, loaded question. I don't think, it depends on the day. Ask me tomorrow, I'll have a different perspective. It's a constant flux and a roller coaster of life, I think with everybody. But one thing that I've got to say, like when I, after I had my son 4 years ago now, I was able to start working at a company, a new company called Just Do No, new for me, a conversion optimization platform. And they let me start the position part-time. So that was kind of my fractional work, I guess, but it's going in part-time for 6 months until my son turned one. And then I spoke with them about coming on full-time and I went on full-time. That, in hindsight, I'm so thankful to Just Do No and their founders for letting me do that. Just, I wish we had more people like them that embraced that and understood what it meant to come back into the workforce after having a child for everybody, right? Like, definitely for the main caregiver, but also for both. I think just having that flexibility as a company, like I have such loyalty to that brand and those founders now because of that. But I think fractional work makes so much sense as a bridge, right, into getting back full time after having a child. I mean, for anyone listening who hasn't yet, when you have a child, it's you go through so many emotions that there's a whole range, right, that you can go through. And for me, I was like itching to get back into work. That's just me. Some are like, no, I found my calling. I don't want to work anymore. And that's great. But I was like, I need like to real human talk. Like I need interaction. But I also had the mom guilt, right? Like guilt that of going back to work and leaving my baby with a stranger. And this was during the pandemic. So I was like, am I a horrible person for doing this? Like you just battle this. For me, it was like two different people in one that was like, which one's going to win? So being able to go back part-time was amazing. So fractional work does open up that flexibility of your schedule to mold it to what you see fit. I wish that full-time companies would offer the same flexibility, and that would be the best solution. Because we were talking before the mics turned on. To me, the biggest issue with fractional work taking over and being so huge is America. It's like here in the US, our insurance sucks. Health insurance and like we need benefits to cover everything, right? We have to have health insurance at the very least and everything else that comes with a benefits package. You don't have that as a fractional worker. That's a great benefit to the company, but it sucks for you. So if everyone goes fractional, what are we going to do? Like the US is going to have to reform some policies and we're going to have way better access, way cheaper access and way better coverage for getting our own, starting your own business and getting our own healthcare that way. Because the options are just really, really limited out there right now.
No, I totally agree. And thinking about that, you know, businesses and companies like setting up that like return to work policy for both men and women, I think that there is, you know, there's some companies that are doing things to kind of better that. Like, I can't think of it now off the top of my head. I think it's called like the Working Moms something. When yeah. I think of it, I will put it in the show notes. But that
the Mom Project.
The Mom Project, that's it.
Yeah.
I completely agree. There's companies like the Mom Project who are really facing it head on that this return to work for both men and women is really tricky and challenging. And if we could have more support, you know, maybe it is governmental that is supporting that return to work process, or, you know, maybe that negates the need for having, you know, a better insurance system. Unfortunately, I think we need a better insurance system. We need a better system, period.
Yes.
I think everybody can agree that the way we do things in America is not logical. But
agreed.
Having some kind of support system in place for you to re-onboard to your role, regardless of how senior or not senior you are, your brain works differently after you have children. And it is same for men and women. It's a little yes. bit more profound for women because we're
yeah.
the caregivers physical and the hormones. Aspect. And if yeah. you're breastfeeding and all of that is, you know, it's more weight upon you. But yeah. I think particularly in this generation of parents, men are taking on more of those responsibilities as well. And we want to give yes. them the ability to feel like they can do that. And agreed. If companies don't support them through For example, I saw a great post yesterday on LinkedIn about having a sales leader go out on parental leave and how the company was going to support them with their quota and how the company was going to pay out their quota for those 4 weeks so that they could take that parental leave. And it was a man.
I love that.
They posted that publicly. And I thought that is actually really, really, A, it's very generous. And it's really supportive of that employee and that you are showing that you really care about that employee. Yeah. And if we had more of that compassion at the corporate level, which obviously at the end of the day, everyone's goal is to make money. I think we know that and every business is in it for the revenue. But if we had more of that compassion, we would be in a much better place. And maybe we wouldn't have the need for these fractional roles to be spun up just to allow us to have that space as parents. Yes.
Agreed. And there's so much there to unpack. We could have like a full-on series just talking about this, and maybe we have a spin-off on this. But I love when companies take this initiative. Hey, leverage it, post it publicly. It's great for your brand also, right? Because now you're going to have positive associations about that brand. If they were ever hiring in the future and you were looking in the future, that would be a good fit for you because you're going to think positively about them. It helps them in so many ways. So promote it. But as long as you're actually doing this and helping your employees, awesome. Kudos to that company. You should put them in the show notes too. There's also, if everybody takes a second to look up Barbara Palmer, she has a company called Broad Perspectives, and she does a program for companies. She works with companies and partners with them to bring on the fourth trimester. And it helps parents, and it can be either or. It does typically tend to be the mother or the primary caregiver, but it helps them transition back into work in every aspect after having your child, especially your first child, but really ongoing. It's a program that a lot of companies can adopt to help make that transition smoother. And it helps the company. Again, it shows investment in your employees and caring for your employees. So it's great all around. So check it out.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. And I think we are going to see more of that. That I am very hopeful that we are at a point in our society, in our community, where we know that we need that and that there are enough leaders that really care and are passionate about making things right for parents, regardless of their gender.
Agreed. Especially, I feel like this is a very American perspective and topic, like this subtopic right now, but when the rest of the world, I'm saying that broadly, when a big chunk of the world is looking at us and being like, why are they doing that? There's something like it's worth a discussion and more than a discussion. It's worth changing shit. Like, let's get things together. Everyone's looking down on us. Come on. Let's show the world that we can be a good America.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I was having this conversation with my mom the other day that, Canada has great socialized healthcare, but it's difficult for them too. Like there's still flaws in any system. And maybe there is like a world forum, maybe it exists. I don't actually know. A world forum where there is some collaboration on how do you actually get healthcare and these problems and, parent care and all of that into a structured way that just makes sense for people and still supports businesses and still supports the idea of, making money, but is also productive for the society as a whole. And maybe that's a little, old school communism of me. I don't know. Like, there's a pendulum of where you want to be in the middle.
Yeah, but I mean, it's helping. I mean, a lot of us are going to go through this as parents. A lot of, if you aren't planning to be a parent, awesome, good for you. Like, that's your choice. But there's a big percentage of the world that is going to procreate. So think about this for everybody holistically. Like, you were originally a child and your parents went through this. So like, how can we help this? It's just so different than like that. And we don't need to go into politics, but like the communism thing and socialism, right? And like, oh, but I work for my dollar and that argument. And like, I don't want to put it towards other people who aren't working for their dollar. Like it's so different from that conversation because it's everybody is going through this or was a part of this in one way, shape or form, like helping parents and getting parents back into the system and supporting parents through the experience. So we just need to get better at that as a system. Agreed.
Absolutely. And maybe this is the first generation of parents who had maybe not everybody, but the first generation of parents that's often both their parents worked, And that is, I think, maybe part of what's driving some of this change is that having two working parents, you know, 40 years ago was, you know, starting to become more common. And now it's almost the rule. There's, you know, there it's, I don't know what the percentage is. I'm sure I could look it up, but there are more dual working parent families than there used to be.
Yeah. So interesting. This is also, I'm reading / listening to, I'm an audiobook girl. I'm listening to a book called I Know How She Does It, and I have mixed feelings. So check out this book. If it's a play on the term, I don't know how she does it, right? It's a play on that. And it's a little bit old school, but it's interesting. I'm finding pieces that I'm like, I disagree with that. And I'm finding pieces that are like, okay, that's great. The core of it is that you need to build your own flexible schedule and companies need to support that. Like, who cares? In this way, it was ahead of its time because it's definitely over a decade old. I need to double check that, but it's all about flex work, right? So if you just had a baby and now you need to take them to daycare at this time in the morning and pick them up at 3 o'clock, like being able to have a flexible schedule where you can do that without guilt, you block it off on your calendar at work, and then you work a couple hours at night to make up for the couple hours that you took off. So that flexibility is there. It's very much promoting companies adopt that and be open to that for their employees and for employees to push for that. So that part I love and I'm all about. It's also the things I'm like about are that it's basically promoting hustle culture and like working nonstop all the time. And I do a lot and I have a lot on my plate, but I you can't be working all the time. You got to give your brain a break. So
oh yeah, check out you need to have a pause. Like that is, I think that is the danger of like the flip side of the fractional. Is, well, if you're going to take on 20-hour a week contracts, obviously you can take on three and like you have 60 hours a week, but then, you know, you never do anything else. And that's not good. You're doing a disservice to yourself. Like we really, as humans, should not be working more than 40 hours a week. Like that is not good for us.
Agreed. That was the one thing I think this book is talking about, like 60 being the average. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, we're still in that culture of overworking ourselves.
Oh my goodness.
And then going home and being a caregiver on top of that.
Well, this has been honestly like, this is such a fabulous conversation. And maybe we do need to have a second whole conversation.
Yeah.
But I know we're coming up on time. So in kind of like a couple of closing questions. So one is, do you have a mentor who has shaped your career path?
I've been thinking about this too. So I'm on the lookout for a mentor, like a new type of mentor. I really want to bring somebody on. And I have so many people who I admire and are my mentors from afar, really just people I idolize, like Lattney from Sixth Sense. I mean, she's God in marketing. But I feel like throughout my career, my mentors have been my friends and my colleagues. I know people often say this, but building a personal board of directors, I love that concept and making sure throughout your career you have a sounding board. I'm super lucky the past few years, I've kind of curated a few different boards of friends that are in the space who I just really trust to bounce ideas off of, get feels from and reactions from, give me advice, or just listen when I need that. But people in the same industry and similar roles to me, so they get it. Because it's so hard when you talk to friends who aren't in the space, like complaining or, you know, talking about a situation that you need to work through at work. And you're using all these marketing acronyms that we love. And they're like, what are you talking about? So having, like, to me, that's been my mentor, has been a collective group of women in my space that I've kind of curated this board of directors over time that I'm just super thankful for.
I love that. And that's why I do a lot of, like, obviously one of the reasons why I do this podcast. And I love, like, there's groups like Women in Revenue or Together Digital that I think they give you that where it's not necessarily a one-to-one mentor, but it's a panel of mentors. And that is sometimes, you know, it's really great to just like share your ideas out there and get a bunch of feedback. Like, Together Digital has a set forum that they do called their Ask and Gives. And you can join an ask and give circle. And so it's consistently the same people you meet with every month. And it's a small group and everyone shares their highs and their lows of the last month. And then if they have an ask or if they have a give, like say I'm hiring for someone on my team or or I need help with XYZ, I need recommendations for this thing. And then as a group, they collectively pick what they want to work on and talk through it and brainstorm it in an hour session. And that, I think, has always been really helpful for me as far as like getting some of that mentorship, especially in a remote world.
Yes, that's interesting. I'm going to check out Together Digital.
Together Digital. It's a really fun group. It started obviously before COVID, and they used to have local chapters with local events, and it's almost completely moved online now.
Cool. I'm going to check that out. You're actually making me think too. So they're Women in Revenue Love. They also have great mentorship program. I'm going to tap into that myself on both ends. So Together Digital, check out. Outside of the tech specific space, there's also a group called Elevate, ELLEVATE. And I found that really awesome for like the local chapter that I'm a part of. For the you definitely need your marketing. If you're in marketing, your marketing or a GTM group of people for this board of directors. But I also think it's great to have other driven professional women as a support system that can give you different perspectives outside of our space. So check that out too, because it's great to just get another perspective involved on the board.
Definitely. I'll definitely look into that. Well, thank you so much, Jane. It was such a joy getting to talk to you. I could talk to you for hours. So I really appreciate you taking this time. And I hope everybody enjoyed this conversation as much as I did.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time. Bye, Anne.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Sassy. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or join us on LinkedIn at Sassy Podcast to stay in the know about future episodes and guests.